All right, so get the, we're going deep on something totally different this time.
Different how?
Well, but usually, you know, we're digging into research articles or news stories.
Right.
But today's source material, someone's personal notes.
Interesting.
Yeah, and not just any notes. These were jotted down while they were stuck at the
Oh.
airport, like full-on philosophical musings in the middle of all the chaos.
Okay, that's kind of cool, actually. The airport as a philosopher's waiting room.
Exactly. And what's wild is how much they pack into these notes. Like big questions about life and meaning and relationships.
Yeah, I mean, airports, they kind of force you to confront those things, don't they? All that waiting and watching people come and go.
Totally. It's like this person's brain went into philosophical overdrive. And you know what? You might be surprised by how much we can pull from this one person's thoughts.
I'm all ears.
So they start off, you know, really broad. Where does one even begin with life?
Classic.
Right. And there's this feeling like happiness is maybe an illusion.
The age-old question.
Yeah. And even a little bit of envy towards deep thinkers. It's almost like they're looking for a framework.
A way to make sense of it all. I mean, that's often what draws people to philosophy, isn't it? That search for meaning.
Totally. And speaking of big questions, they pretty quickly dive into the realm of faith.
Okay.
But it's not about arguing for or against believing in something, it's more about the implications, you know?
I see.
Like they ponder if a higher power designed everything perfectly from the get-go, or if maybe it was more of a step-by-step process.
Interesting. So almost like a comparison between creationism and evolution.
Exactly. Like, could even a divine being work through evolution?
That's a thought-provoking concept for sure. It really echoes this long-running debate in theology and philosophy, you know,
Right. Yeah.
about reconciling faith with what we observe in the natural world.
Yeah. And throughout history, there have been all these different perspectives. Some who believe in intelligent design, like a preordained plan, and others who see evolution as a natural process, which doesn't necessarily negate a creator, but it suggests a different way of doing things.
Absolutely. So it's not a simple either situation.
And then the author shifts gears a bit. It's like they go from the cosmos to pondering what makes us human.
Okay, how so?
Well, they bring up this concept of a blank slate and what drives us forward, what motivates us. They even question the very things that set us apart from other living beings.
Yeah, that touches on the whole nature versus nurture debate, right? Like how much is pre-programmed and how much is shaped by our experiences.
Exactly. And psychology really dives into this, highlighting, you know, those basic biological needs we all have, but
The
also
huge impact of environment.
totally our social interactions, our culture, all the choices we make. It all plays a part in shaping who we are and what drives us.
Right, it's this incredible interplay of factors.
And speaking of social interactions, the author really emphasizes how much relationships impact us.
Yeah, no surprise there. We are social creatures after all.
Right. And they point out both the good and the bad sides.
The double-edged sword of connection.
Yes. They even use this word, I had to look it up, opduo.
Opduel.
It's an Afrikaans word,
Okay.
basically like a devil on your shoulder. But it implies a closer relationship. Like someone who's influencing you negatively, but you're still connected to them.
That's fascinating. You know, it really captures that tension. We need relationships, but they can also hurt us deeply.
Right. It's a risk we take.
And they're not always easy.
No, they're definitely not. And then there's this interesting question about a switch that flips around age 30.
A switch.
Yeah, it's like they're wondering if that's when we gain control
Well,
or if it's just the illusion of control.
That's an interesting observation. It does seem like a lot of people go through some kind of shift in their perspective around that age.
Right. And I can relate to that too. Like you hit a certain point and maybe things feel different, but is it real control or just
Or
a...
just a change in how you view things.
Yeah. And from a psychological standpoint, this actually aligns with some of the theories about adult development.
Yeah, like Erik Erikson stages, you know, there's that period where you're figuring out identity and intimacy, and you start to realize maybe you don't have as much control over things as you thought you did.
It's that tension between agency and accepting limitations.
Right, exactly. And the author takes this even further. They ask, is life just a constant battle between extremes?
Light and dark, love and hate.
Powerful imagery. And what's even more intriguing is that they bring up how the brain regions associated with love and hate.
Are actually right next to each other.
Yeah, it's like this weird paradox, right? These seemingly opposite emotions have a lot of neural overlap.
I know, it's wild. And it makes you wonder about the whole good versus evil dichotomy, you know? Like maybe it's not so black and white.
Right, more like a complex tapestry of neural responses and emotions.
So it's not just philosophy that grapples with these questions. Neuroscience is starting to shed some light on them too.
Totally. And this is where things get really interesting because the author then connects these internal struggles to what they're observing out in the world, specifically at the airport.
Right. It's like their own personal philosophy is suddenly colliding with the real life dramas unfolding around them.
Exactly. And that's where we'll pick things up in part two. So stay tuned. Welcome back. You know, it's amazing how these everyday places like airports can spark such deep thoughts.
Right. It's like our airport philosopher stumbled onto something universal, you know, that feeling of anticipation and hope.
Yeah. And maybe a little bit of anxiety, too, all mixed together.
Exactly. It's a whole emotional cocktail. And I think we've all been there at some point.
Definitely. It's part of the human experience. And it shows how powerful observation can be, just tuning in to what's happening around you.
It can really make you think.
Yeah.
So let's dive back into some of the themes we touched on in part one.
Sounds good.
We were talking about the author's struggle with faith.
Right. Not necessarily rejecting the idea of a higher power,
but questioning the mechanics of it all. Especially in light of evolution.
Yeah, that whole debate about faith and reason, it's been going on for centuries.
It really has thinkers like Augustine and Aquinas.
Even Kierkegaard.
They've all grappled with this. How to reconcile belief with what we see in the natural world.
With empirical evidence.
Right. And it seems like the author is trying to find a framework that can hold both faith and science.
That's a fascinating challenge. You know, instead of seeing them as opposites.
Yeah, finding a way for them to coexist.
Like maybe they're both different lenses for viewing the same reality.
Exactly. And maybe the how isn't as important as the why. Whether it's intelligent design or evolution, there's still this sense of awe.
At the sheer complexity of life.
Right. It's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
And that sense of wonder, it connects us to people across time and cultures.
Totally. It's a shared human experience, recognizing that there are these big mysteries out there.
And speaking of mysteries, the author also delves into what makes us human.
That age-old question.
Right.
Yeah.
And they bring up nature versus nurture.
How much is innate versus how much is influenced by our environment?
Exactly. And they're really interested in what drives us forward, you know, what motivates us to keep going even when things are tough.
Yeah, that's a core question in psychology. What are the forces that propel us through life?
And there are so many theories about that.
Oh, yeah. Some focus on basic needs like food and shelter.
Right.
Others look at higher level needs like belonging and self-actualization. Maslow's hierarchy is a good example.
Right. It's like a pyramid of needs.
Exactly. And the author seems to be exploring all these different levels.
And they specifically highlight relationships as a major shaping force in our lives.
Makes sense. We're social creatures by nature.
But they also acknowledge how complicated relationships can be.
Oh, yeah. The joy and the pain all mixed up together.
And that ties back to their point about a switch flipping around age 30.
A shift in perspective.
Yeah, like maybe that's when we start to grasp the illusion of control, or at least become more aware of it.
That's interesting. You know, developmental psychology actually supports that idea.
It does.
Yeah. There's a lot of research on how our understanding of ourselves and the world evolves as we age.
So it's not just the author's personal observation. It's something that's been studied and documented.
Exactly. And it often coincides with major life transitions, you know, like starting a family or a career.
Which can bring up a lot of questions about control and responsibility.
Absolutely. And the author then takes this idea of opposing forces even further.
With that question about light and dark, love and hate.
Such powerful imagery. And then they bring up how those seemingly opposite emotions
are processed in very close areas of the brain.
I know. Isn't that wild? It's like good and evil are right next door to each other.
It really challenges that simple binary thinking.
Totally. Neuroscience is showing us that the brain is way more complex than we used to think.
So maybe love and hate aren't so different after all.
Maybe they share some common roots, you know, in terms of our emotional responses and how we connect with others.
And that complexity is reflected in the author's observations at the airport.
Right. They start noticing these little dramas unfolding all around them.
People waiting anxiously for their loved ones. A whole spectrum of emotions on display.
It's like a microcosm of the human experience.
Yeah.
And that's where we'll pick things up in part three.
Back again for the final stretch of our deep dive into the mind of an airport philosopher.
It's really been quite a journey, hasn't it? From those initial scribbled notes to these big questions about life and the universe.
It really has. And you know what strikes me? how much these themes resonate even today.
Yes.
It's like the author is grappling with stuff that people have pondered for centuries.
Oh, absolutely. It speaks to the timelessness of these questions, you know? The search for meaning, the nature of faith, our place in the world. These are things humans have always wrestled with.
Yeah, like we can send rovers to Mars, but we still haven't figured out how to be happy all the time or have perfect relationships.
Right. And the author actually touches on that. They wonder how, despite all our technological advancements, we're still struggling with the same fundamental dilemmas.
Like we haven't really cracked the code of human existence?
Maybe that's part of what keeps it interesting.
Okay.
Right. The fact that we're still searching.
True. It's like the more we learn, the more we realize we don't know.
Exactly. And I think that's where the author's musings about hope come in.
Yeah. They ask this really powerful question. Is hope what keeps us going?
Hmm. Beautiful question. It's like even when we know there are no guarantees.
Right. Life can be unpredictable and messy.
But hope is that spark that keeps us moving forward.
Yeah.
It keeps us believing that things might get better.
It's not about being naive or ignoring the tough stuff.
No, it's more about choosing to believe in the possibility of something good, even amidst the uncertainty.
And I think the author's time at the airport really highlights that. You know, all those people waiting for their loved ones.
Those moments of anticipation and longing, they're all fueled by hope.
And it's not just about romantic love either.
Right, absolutely. It could be family, friends, even that sense of belonging you get from being part of a group or a community.
We're hardwired for connection. It's in our nature.
And hope is what allows us to keep reaching out to each other, even when we know there's a risk of getting hurt.
It's a vulnerable thing to put yourself out there.
But the rewards can be immense.
Right, yeah.
Those deep connections, they give life so much meaning.
They really do. So as we wrap up this deep dive, I think it's worth asking ourselves, what gives us hope? What are those things that keep us going, even when times are tough?
It's a question we should all be asking ourselves regularly. And maybe the answer is different for everyone.
Right. Maybe it's our faith or our family or our passions. Whatever it is, it's important to nurture those sources of hope.
Because they're what sustain us through life's ups and downs.
And you know what I find really hopeful? The fact that the author was able to find so much meaning in a seemingly ordinary experience. Like waiting at the airport.
That's the beauty of it, right? Hope and meaning, they're not always found in grand gestures or extraordinary events.
They can be right there in the everyday moments, if we're open to seeing them.
And that's a powerful message to take away from this deep dive.
So keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep that spark of hope alive.
Thanks for joining us.